Communities on Kauai and East Honolulu are struggling to recover from the wild weekend flooding. The governor proclaimed Kauai County a disaster area yesterday. The record rainfall is a test of our resiliency as we assess our ability to plan and respond to what's to come. The Honolulu City Council's Budget Committee restored money for the Office of Climate Change after much hand-wringing last week. The office is still in startup mode. We sat down with its director, Josh Stanbro, who will mark 1 year on the job on May 1st. He's grateful the money is back in the budget for now.
And we've really been trying to lay the foundation for, you know, really smart investment in the future around energy efficiency, climate resilience, making sure that the infrastructure we build today is really going to be durable and last the test that we see really coming over the horizon with climate impacts.
Right. And listeners may recall that recently we had the problems on the North Shore with the waves taking out that section of the, I think it was the bike path and the wall. You know, I mean, real issues that we're facing today.
Well, I mean, this is, we always said, you know, oh, our children, we have to do this for our grandchildren. What we're realizing is that this is happening faster than, you know, even many of the scientists had projected. It's happening in real time. It's happening to us right now and to cities across the globe. I mean, other cities that are in the 100 Resilient Cities Network that we're really lucky and honored to be a part of, facing some of the same challenges. We're sharing, you know, what are the best approaches to this. These are cases of you know, fresh impression. This hasn't happened before. And so how do we develop new solutions to it? How do we make sure that we're leveraging, you know, dollars and projects to meet many different benefits and meet these challenges? You mentioned the North Shore. You know, that's something that's not likely to go away, right? I mean, what we're going to see is we know the State Commission on Climate Change has issued a report, came out in December, and it said, you know, we are locked into 3 feet of sea level rise. Now, we don't know if that's going to happen by 2050 or if that's going to happen by 2100. But regardless, we're building infrastructure that we want to last for 30, 50, 70 years. We're going to have to look at those long-term projections and figure out where do we need to reposition things.
Right. And then obviously, too, with our economic engine in Waikiki, you know, what do we need to do? What does industry need to do? What do we need to look at long-term for homes along the shoreline?
Yeah, and, you know, these we're looking at multiple levels here. We're looking at near-term, mid-term, long-term. Our office was involved with Department of Parks and Recreation and doing some beach restoration at Kuhio Beach that was a direct, you know, sort of result of, you know, increased erosion and sea level rise. And, you know, there's innovative new sort of beach mattress that that we put in there that helps sort of stabilize what had been some erosive areas and really keeps the beach usable for our visitors. You know, these are not long-term solutions. This is, you know, maybe it's a 10-year sort of thing, but it helps right now as we position ourselves and do some long-term planning with climate action plan and the resilience strategy around how do we really invest for the long haul and you know, change the infrastructure and the platform so that you know, we can continue to survive, adapt, and thrive no matter what comes at us.
And then you were hoping to, I think, double your budget from this first year?
Well, so we were a startup year. We kind of came in midway. And so, you know, the council we really supported the office startup with some seed funding that helped get us through the first year phase. And what we've proposed now is a full, you know, what we believe to be the sort of minimum efficient operating budget that would be year over year with a stable staff and with the with, you know, the types of projects and analysis that we need going forward. So what was proposed in the budget was about $1.14 million as an annual operating budget for the office going forward. We really believe that that's the minimum efficient amount for us to execute our mandate under the charter that you know, the voters, you know, gave to our office. Other offices in other cities are actually much larger in some cases. But we believe with public-private partnerships and being able to really work efficiently with other departments, we can really execute on our vision with that amount. And happily, council has restored funding to that amount, and we really appreciate their support for the vision of the office and to really tackle these long-term challenges.
Are there any, projects that you folks are about to launch that would be visible for taxpayers out there?
Yeah, well, I mean, there's things that have been in the works, certainly, that people are going to see. You know, there's the LED streetlight program that's going to save $5 million a year in taxpayer dollars, but it's also going to be, you know, a safer product, and it's going to reduce our climate emissions by about 15,000 tons a year. You know, I mentioned the Cujillo Beach, project. How do we innovate and try to find these solutions where we can, even on a small scale? The electric bus demonstration that came through, you know, we had a Proterra bus. We have a BYD bus in town, and these are all electric, 100% electric. That means quieter streets. It means less pollution in our clogged urban areas. And then it also means, you know, that we're reducing that climate footprint. And that's followed immediately on, you know, all four counties coming together and saying, we pledge that we're going to get 100% renewable ground transportation by 2045. So as an office, what we're trying to do is help coordinate the policy piece and really set the framework for the projects to fit and follow into as we move forward. And what we're doing is we're developing a resilient strategy that really helps articulate what are those concrete programs, projects, and policies that need to be implemented if we are going to survive, adapt, and thrive in the 21st century, given the new challenges that we have.
And then the rollout of the LEDs, I know, you know, was started initially. There was some pushback, but you've got that in some neighborhoods now.
Yeah, well, I think it was a great example of city government working in partnership, with the people. When the project was first proposed, there was sort of a light level that mirrored essentially what the state did on the major highways, 4,000 Kelvin. You know, some folks said we think that might be a little bit high in some of the, you know, the smaller streets and neighborhoods. And, you know, the City Department of Design and Construction, they listened. And what they did is they modified the plan. About 90% now of the streetlights that are going to be going into communities are actually at 3,000 Kelvin, which is actually the same level of light I have in my house. So we have LEDs in our house at 3,000. It's a nice warm color. And I think it's going to be a great project and you know, save a ton of money and a ton of emission. You know, we always say in order to keep the quality of life and what we love about Hawaii, we're going to have to change a little bit, ironically. We're going to have to change some of the practices. We're going to have to change some of the policies that we've long had. And this is one of those changes. You know, it's going to be a little bit different light, but we believe it's a, you know, it's a better project but with the integration of some of those community concerns, and we really listened.
Is there anything specific with King Tides and, let's say, Waikiki and the hotel industry that
well,
you're looking at?
Certainly King Tides was a wake-up call for all of us. You know, there's great citizen science around King Tides, some of the photos that folks took. You know, we really saw, we got a postcard from the future about what sea level rise is going to look like for us on a daily basis. King Tides was about 10 inches higher than where we are right now. And so if we look out and project into the future, that's, you know, a few decades out. But we're looking at, you know, where was that line at that time? And what's the infrastructure we would have to design and roll in to make sure that our, you know, private and public property and lives and are not at risk from that extra run-up? Because, you know, what was great and lucky is we had those king tides. Good thing it didn't rain. You know, if you got a big downpour and you had that elevated water, there's no place for the water to go, and that's how you get flooding. That's really what, you know, what we worry about in the long run is as sea level rises, you know, our stormwater outfalls become infalls. And so when the rains come, and lucky we had blue sky during the king tides, but if there had been big rains, there's no place for that water to go. And that's the kind of infrastructure questions we face.
Right. But on several levels, the federal and state levels, we're also looking at stormwater runoff and doing more to contain, you know, where that water goes.
Yeah. And, you know, we're learning a lot from other cities in our network with the 100 Resilient Cities. You know, New Orleans, which, you know, in some cases is below sea level, you know, they're really pivoting and designing green infrastructure to help absorb and soak up the water. They've got a mantra now that says we're going to work with water, live with water, rather than live against it. And really, you know, that's the mantra that we believe is going to be sustainable for the future. We have to learn to work with water and not against it, because if we fight a battle against water, inevitably you lose.
And Earth Day is coming up.
Yeah.
And we understand there's a big Blue Line project that's in the planning.
There is. Thanks for mentioning that. We're really excited to be working in partnership with the Blue Planet Foundation. I participated in the last Blue Line project, and it was great. You know, we work with kids. We work with community members to get out, get into communities, and really, you know, chalk the sidewalks and show where is that 3-foot sea level rise, and bring awareness to the issue. You know, we have time to deal with this, but we have to start now. So we have to make decisions now about infrastructure and location and, you know, how do we build some of this green infrastructure to absorb some of the water and really prevent the kind of damage that that sea level rise will bring. There was just an analysis from the state, $12.9 billion of private property on this island, on Oahu, is at risk from a 3-foot sea level rise. So really it becomes a question of, you know, what are the costs? You know, people say, oh, well, it's going to cost too much to, you know, change our trajectory and deal with climate change. Well, what are the costs if we don't? And really those costs are huge. $12.9 billion, just private infrastructure. State Department of Transportation has estimated it would be $15 billion in terms of road exposure and vulnerability across the state. And that doesn't factor in airports, harbors, all the public infrastructure. So we're really looking at, we have to invest wisely now so that we don't have huge costs later.
Okay, so Saturday we can all look around and say, uh-huh.
Yeah, Saturday I encourage people to, you know, Google Blue Line Project and register online. We're going to be in a couple sites around the island on Saturday, helping working with the community to make ourselves all aware of what that blue line looks like.
That was Josh Stambro of the city's fledgling Office of Climate Change. I'm Catherine Cruz, and you're listening to The Conversation.